This is a production from the Yak.com podcasting network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak! Yak!
Yo, what is up? I feel like I haven't done this in forever. We're at episode 8, I think, of Keep It Simple, Stupid. If you're listening for the first time, the idea here is we take the technology news from the week and try and translate it into plain English or as close as I can get to it. I'm Brian, I'm your host. It's been a while. Feels like it's been a long time. I did an episode last Tuesday, I think, talking about my in-depth review of the new iPhone, the XS in my case, and the Apple Watch Series 4. And then I was planning on doing my normal regular episode on Friday, and then something happened. I saw, maybe last Wednesday or Thursday, Elon Musk, this sounds crazy, but it's true. Elon Musk sent a tweet out last week and basically said, hey, Tesla, current Tesla owners, our delivery centers are overwhelmed because we've got all these deliveries we've got to get through. Trying to make this, you know, end of quarter push. They're trying to hit their numbers, I think. And so they had all these cars they're trying to deliver the last few days of the quarter. And we're understaffed. So if you want to just basically show up at the delivery center and tell them you want to help, like, we'll let you help deliver people's cars to them. And so I think when people tweeted that, they thought he was high or whatever, right? Like out of his mind. And then a few days after that, maybe last, I don't know, Thursday or something, the president of our local, of the Austin Tesla, what are we called? The Austin Tesla Owners Club or something. But anyway, we've got this mailing list and he sends out a mail. He's like, hey, just talk to the folks at Tesla. Like, they're serious about this. So, you know, who wants to show up? And so, I signed up like, yeah, I'm kind of curious. Cause it sounds like a train wreck, but I'm kind of morbidly curious to know how this is going to go. And so we went Thursday night and they did kind of a little orientation for us and kind of just get, you know, like, here's what we want you to tell people about the car. You know, if they've got questions, answer them, you know, make sure you cover these basic things and then, you know, get them in and out, you know, pretty much so we can get the next group up. And so I showed up, a buddy of mine, we went on, who also is a Tesla owner. We went on Friday morning and, it was pretty crazy. Delivered some cars. Most of the people that I talked to, this was their first Tesla, so they weren't quite sure what to expect. And unlike me, like when I was waiting for my Model 3, I was obsessed with it. And I watched every video ever published to YouTube about the Model 3. I read the owner's manual 17 times, had basically half of it memorized. And so when I went to go pick up my car, I knew more than anybody there about the Model 3. And it was so new at the time. I was the first one in Austin to get one. And so they just, you know, they didn't know a lot about it and they hadn't really had a bunch of them laying around to play with. So I went in there knowing more than these folks. And I think probably a lot of the people who got ours early on, were probably in the same camp. Like we knew pretty much what to expect and had been reading everything we possibly could. But most of the folks, at least the ones that I talked to that showed up last week, they didn't know much at all. Like didn't know how to put the car in gear, didn't know how to turn autopilot on or off. I mean, pretty green. And so a couple of them, we had spent quite a bit of time, probably more than Tesla would have wanted, showing people how to use their cars. But anyway, so that was, I was planning to just go Friday for a few hours, and then they asked me if I could stay. And then before you knew it, it was the evening. And so I was working in between and taking breaks and stuff, but I ended up being there till, I don't know, 6 or 7 p.m. And then by the time I got home and got something to eat, it was late, and I just didn't feel like doing it. So so it has been, I guess, a week and a half. And so I guess we'll just skip the technology news from last week, and we'll move on to this week because there's a lot going on. And before I get started, I just, if you listen to Marcus Myers, a former Texas football player, he's got a podcast here on the Yak, which is awesome. It's called Until the Whistle. And so he gives some really cool insights and perspectives from a, you know, from a former player. And, he, a lot of times he opens his episodes and he'll give a shout out to, an adult beverage of choice that he happens to be, drinking, you know, while he's recording. And so, I'm going to, in a nod to Marcus, I'm going to give a nod, to my beverage of choice this evening, this beautiful Friday evening. It's, lukewarm tap water, courtesy of, City of Leander. So shout out to Leander Municipal Water Systems, whoever they are. Let me take a sip right now. That's good water. Okay. On with the news. There's a lot happened this week. Let's start with the, you know, we've been talking and alluding to this for a while. Microsoft had their Surface event on, I don't know, Monday or Tuesday. So we all knew that they were going to introduce new Surface devices, obviously, is the name of the damn event. And they did. All I can really say about these things is if you are, for whatever reason, I don't know why, but if for whatever reason you are all in on the Windows operating system and you just refuse to use a Mac, then I think, as far as I can tell, these are the most aesthetically pleasing Windows portable devices that are made. And, you know, the thing with Windows is there's so many manufacturers making devices, Asus and Samsung and Dell and Hewlett Packard, and I'm sure there's a bazillion more, and you know, I'm forgetting, but I don't know how Windows users, somebody hit me up and let me know if you are listening and you're a Windows person. How do you pick which damn one to get? I mean, there's honestly so many. You know, the thing about Apple is they make just a couple of everything, so there's, for their laptops, for instance, there's a MacBook and there's a MacBook Pro. And so the way they classify that is, you know, your MacBook is basically for everyone who's not a developer or making movies or, you know, a professional photographer, musician, or, you know, just your average everyday user, get the MacBook. And then if you are, you know, some sort of professional doing something super taxing on the hardware, then get a Pro. But that's pretty much it. You know, so you can get different processor speeds and stuff, but there's really only two. And then on the desktop systems, you know, there's the iMac, the all-in-one. So the screen and the computer all-in-one. And then there's the iMac Pro, which is again for professional, use, same all-in-one screen, just, more capable processor and other components. And then there's the Mac Pro, which is similar to an iMac Pro. So this is, it's geared towards professionals, but it doesn't have a screen built in. You got to supply your own screen. And that's pretty much it. And then on the phones, you know, they've got two or three phones at any given time that they sell. You know, an iPad, they've got an iPad Pro, and then just your regular iPad. You know, watch, they've got two sizes, and I guess they do have like a stainless steel and then an aluminum, but it's usually pretty much two or three. So if you're in on Apple, then it's typically pretty, you don't have to do a lot of guessing or thinking about what you want to get, because you kind of know. I'm not a professional, so I probably just need the MacBook or the iMac or, you know, whatever. But with the Windows ecosystem, there's so freaking many. So I don't know how people pick. But, you know, for me, you know, and I care about as much about the aesthetic and the industrial design of the product as I do the software and the user experience. And for my money, these seem to me to be the cleanest designs in terms of the hardware. You know, a lot of these laptops, I'll see like a big, big, ugly ass Pentium sticker somewhere on the keyboard, or, you know, there's always this badging and all this ugly shit on there. And then the Windows, the Surface devices look pretty clean. I don't see any badging. I see keyboard and screen, which is, I think, the way it should be. So if you're all in on Windows, I don't know, to me, these are the best devices. Now, they may not be the most powerful. Like, I know there's a company called Alienware who I think is owned by Dell now, but they make these laptops that are focused on hardcore gamers, and they have these crazy graphics cards inside of them and stuff. So yeah, like, I know that those are probably more powerful than these Surface laptops, but I don't know, to me, for the average person, these seem to me to be the way to go. So I don't use Windows, so I can't say anything about Windows 10 or the performance or anything. I can tell, you know, aesthetically, they look the cleanest to me. It seems to me they have some of, if not the best battery life. And then they've always got, it seems to me, pretty decent hardware inside of them. So these Surface devices seem to fit that bill. The more interesting thing to me that came out of the event, and I don't think that anyone had seen this, or I didn't see any leaks about it or anything, but it was headphones. So Microsoft is making, I think they're just calling them Surface headphones. Yep. And so they're over the ear Bluetooth headphones, look similar to maybe a pair of Beats. So big over the ear. They've got Cortana built in. So Cortana is Microsoft's voice assistant. So they're equivalent to Siri or Google Assistant. So they've got Cortana built in. They've got noise cancellation built in. And one of the cool things I saw was that you could actually, on the left and right cups, the pieces over your ear, you can actually rotate. So the outer edges of those cups actually are dials, and you can rotate those to adjust both volume on one side and then the level of noise cancellation on the other. I thought that was pretty cool. I don't know if those dials or those controls are like context sensitive. So depending on what you're doing or what app or, you know, or whatever, the function of those change, or if it's always volume and noise cancellation. But anyway, I thought that was pretty cool. It looks like they're only making one color, which is like a gray, like a light gray. Battery life, 15 hours, which is good. Pretty light, 0.64 pounds. And they charge via USB-C. I thought those were pretty cool. I don't know how they compare sound quality wise, and I don't think anyone will until they get their hands on them and can do a review, but they don't look bad. I don't know how, you know, again, how good the noise cancellation is, for instance. You know, if you need noise cancellation, you know, to me, Bose has always been the gold standard for that, but, you know, maybe these compete. I guess we'll see. I don't think they're actually out yet. I think they went up for pre-order, and I don't think Microsoft said a specific date, just that they would be here, at least in the US and I think the UK, in time for Christmas shopping. So before the end of the year, they'll be here. There are a few other announcements from the event. One that caught my attention was this app mirroring. And so basically, you probably know, or maybe you don't, but so Windows or Microsoft was doing their own phone, their Windows phone, or at least they were making the operating system, and they basically bailed on that. And so now I think to sort of bridge that gap, they're building this feature into Windows where you can actually take if you have an Android phone, you can take and mirror an app on your Android device to your Windows desktop. And I don't know how deep the level of integration is. If it's like you can, you know, drag and drop or copy and paste, like for instance, from your Windows desktop to an app, you know, a file onto an app, you know, an Android app, or copy and paste between, you know, from your Windows device to your Android app. I don't know if they've got any of that. And I don't recall them mentioning it specifically, but it almost is enough to make me want to go get one and get a Windows 10 device and an Android app just to see how tight the level of integration is. But anyway, that was interesting, I thought. Everything else to me was kind of a shrug, whatever. So that's the Microsoft event. Up next, we still have the Google Pixel event that's happening on the 9th. So that's on Tuesday. And quite a bit has already been leaked about that. Like, I don't know if there's anything left to talk about that hasn't been leaked, hopefully. If you're a Google fan and you get up for the events, then hopefully there's something that you won't already know. But we'll find out soon enough. All right, let's switch gears. Let's talk about iOS 12. I've reviewed that on one of my previous episodes and begged and pleaded with everyone to upgrade their device to iOS 12. And it looks like, because of me, of course, and my vast number of listeners on this podcast, it looks like we're really moving the needle in terms of iOS 12 adoption. So Apple hasn't released any official numbers yet, and they usually do that a couple months after the OS is released. But one of the biggest, I guess you'd call them one of the biggest analytics companies, their name is Mixpanel, and they have analytics running in a lot of mobile apps, and certainly not all of them, but pretty good number of them. So Mixpanel will release their numbers, and typically, although Apple's may not be exactly in line with what Mixpanel is showing, they're usually pretty close. So according to Mixpanel's numbers, iOS 12 usage has now surpassed iOS 11 usage. And that took, how many weeks did that take? What is it, two? Yeah, I think two and some change. And so they're at right now, according to Mixpanel, they're at 47.6. iOS 12 is at 47.6% penetration, whereas iOS 11 is at 45.6. And then you say, well, that doesn't add up to 100. And yeah, that's because you've got people, I don't know why, still running older versions of iOS. To get to the same point last year for iOS 11 to reach that, for it to pass iOS 10, it took, about a month. It looks like that happened on November 6th of last year. So yeah, about twice as long for 11 to surpass 10 as it has taken for 12 to surpass 11. And up to this point, you know, it's been a couple weeks now, and the only real issue I've seen is it looks like some people are having to unlock their phone before they can plug in their charging cable and have it charged. So if the phone is just, you know, for instance, sitting on their nightstand and they take the cable and plug it in, then I guess apparently some people, when they do that, their phone doesn't start charging. Like they have to wake it up and unlock it for it to start charging. We've got four iPhone XS's here, and none of them are exhibiting that behavior. We've got two iPads, neither of them are doing that. It doesn't look to be real widespread, but it looks like some people are affected by it. And Apple already has a fix. So iOS 12.1, which they just released in beta to the beta testers, has a fix for that. But other than that, I haven't seen anybody, honestly, that I can recall complain about anything in iOS 12. And it's been a long time since you could say that about an iOS release. Usually, you know, people are complaining about something or some things. And so far, other than this this charging issue, I haven't seen anybody complain about anything. And I've only seen, you know, positive comments, which is in line with my experiences. Even, I think I mentioned on my review, even when I installed the very first beta back in June, which typically when we get those, the developer betas, the first one, they're usually buggy as hell. And I thought that the very first beta of iOS 12 was more stable and more performant than any version of iOS 11. And I don't mean the iOS 11 betas, I mean the actual release. Yeah, if you haven't yet, please upgrade to iOS 12. I wouldn't necessarily say you'll think you got a new phone, but you'll definitely notice a performance improvement. And in a lot of cases, it's really significant. So upgrade if you haven't. What else? This is kind of crazy, but it came out, I don't know, Wednesday or Thursday. The story was dropped by Bloomberg and picked up by everybody. And to be clear, Bloomberg has really good sources, so I'm not saying this is like irresponsible journalism, or I'm not even saying they're wrong, but they dropped this, bombshell is probably overplaying it, but dropped a pretty... this big story that apparently, allegedly, according to them, China had somehow figured out a way, the Chinese government had somehow figured out a way to implant quote unquote spy chips on motherboards going into servers of a few of the really popular server vendors. And that these servers were then in turn sold at the very least to Amazon and Microsoft. Meaning that according to the report, China was able to spy on Amazon and Apple servers running in their data centers. There's a lot to unpack here with the story. So let's just start with, first of all, these are all anonymous sources that Bloomberg has. Second, the idea of a spy chip in the first place, I'm super skeptical about. I guess it is possible that someone got a chip on a motherboard that was siphoning data going to and from the processor and the memory and hard drive and back and forth and whatever. Maybe, but the chip was so small it wouldn't be able to store any real amount of data. I mean, they showed a picture of this alleged chip and it was so small. I mean, there's no memory or storage that could fit on the thing. And then furthermore, you'd have to fit some kind of cell connection or something inside the chip, or somehow tap into the Ethernet port and the Ethernet cable, right? The hardwire, and then somehow direct the traffic. Like the whole thing just reeks. Now again, I'm not accusing Bloomberg of being irresponsible journalists. Amazon and Apple have both vehemently denied this, by the way. But I think maybe they are maybe I don't doubt that they had a source relay this to them. I just think that maybe their source indoor, the Bloomberg folks, were misinformed, or they got an oversimplified explanation of what was really going on because it was something super technical and someone tried to dumb it down and then dumb it down and then dumb it down. And then eventually it, you know, makes its way to the source who gives the story to Bloomberg. And, you know, by that point, it's like stuff from the movies that just isn't, I mean, I don't want to say impossible, but this is nearly impossible. So I do believe Amazon and Apple, when they deny this, you know, based on what Bloomberg has said, it seems very, very unlikely, that this actually happened the way that they said. Now again, is it possible that something happened? Sure. And that wouldn't be the first time that, foreign governments were found to be tampering with the devices being manufactured by private companies. That's been going on for a long time. So that wouldn't surprise me. But the likelihood of this story being completely accurate, I think, is pretty minuscule. So, you know, the question is, do you need to go delete your Amazon and iCloud accounts tomorrow and go check your credit card? Because no, I don't think there's anything to worry about. I mean, you think you have a better chance of getting struck by lightning than this being actually true. Anyway, I debated whether or not to even bring it up, but it was a huge story and has been talked about a lot. And even since the original story broke, Amazon and Apple issued their denials, and there's been a bunch of back and forth. Folks from both the... I want to say the FBI or the CIA, and then like the UK equivalent. I don't know the name of that agency, but I did see today that folks from both of those have essentially said the same thing I'm saying, which is it seems super far-fetched, and you know, you can't ever rule anything out. But I just personally don't think the technology's there. I have no doubt that China or a number of governments would love to do that, probably even our own. But I just don't think the technology is there for them to do that. And these devices are inspected. So when these companies take delivery of the devices, they inspect. I mean, they're going over them with a fine tooth comb to make sure that there's nothing shady, because they know that customers' data is going to be stored on these servers and passing through them. So, I mean, it's not like they just pop it out of the box and turn the power on and plug it into the, you know, here's your new iCloud server, right? Like, they inspect the hell out of these things. So, I don't know. I'm super skeptical, but I guess we'll see. And I'm curious to see if Bloomberg comes back with something, some more evidence or something that could actually be corroborated or sounds halfway feasible. What else we got? Talking about iOS 12, Mac OS also got an update last week called, code name for this one is called Mojave. And so that runs that's the operating system for your MacBook, iMac, Mac Pro, MacBook Pro. It's funny, man. I feel like Mac OS, it gets totally overshadowed by iOS, and that makes sense. Apple sells a hell of a lot more iPhones than they do Macs, but still they do sell a good number of them. My review real quick, if you want it, is I haven't had any issues. I haven't noticed anyone has had any real issues. I wouldn't say that it's you're going to see like major performance gains like you would going from iOS 11 to 12. They've cleaned up a few things and stabilized a few things. So, I don't think it's going to hurt to upgrade, but are you going to notice some night and day difference like you potentially could going from iOS 11 to iOS 12? No, but it never hurts to be on the latest. If for no other reason, then eventually these companies will stop supporting the older versions, which means they stop creating security patches for them. And you definitely always want to have the latest security patches, right? So, which typically means you need to You know, you don't have to upgrade on day one, but you generally need to keep up with the latest OS. So if for no other reason, just then to get the security updates, you know, if you've got a Mac and you've got 30 minutes or so, upgrade to Mojave. And they have added some features. I'm underplaying it. But nothing like nothing crazy or mind blowing or like, oh shit, I got to get that. Yeah, just a little bit more stable, more solid. And that's never a bad thing. So I wanted to throw that out before I forgot. What else we got? Facebook. Let's talk about privacy. You may have heard that the co-founders of two of the co-founders of Instagram, who was bought by Facebook, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, that they recently left and resigned. And there are several rumors about why that was. And it doesn't really matter, but the bottom line is they left. And then Facebook basically installed a Facebook person to now oversee Instagram. And within days, now we've got this story that Facebook is testing tracking location history in Instagram. So keeping track of where you are when you're using the app, and potentially depending on their implementation, even when you're not using the app. And I don't know, you know, specifically how they've, you know, what their implementation looks like. But on both iOS and Android, as a developer, when you create your app, you can require, you can ask for updates from the location, from the GPS. And so sometimes you ask for, at least on iOS, we'd call them like rough or major changes. So when you move like from one city to another, or one zip code to another, or one state to another, right? When you're when you're moving a great distance, then the app, you know, lets you know. And then there's also fine-grained access, which is basically every time you move, you know, a foot, it's telling your app about it. I don't know. Again, these are tests, and I don't know, you know, what Instagram's implementation looks like, but it's not lost on me that within days of these founders stepping down, now this story comes out. So I don't use Instagram. I don't use Facebook. I know obviously a lot of people do. And so I would just say, keep an eye on any Instagram app updates you get in the coming weeks and months. And if at any point you get asked for location permissions, then just understand what you're getting into. And maybe you don't care. But for me, that's the last people I want to give any more data to other than Google is Facebook. And so yeah, I just thought I'd bring that to everybody's attention. What else? What do we got? Oh, yeah. This one was interesting. There is, or there was, a company called Phantom Secure who apparently made a custom, basically a custom BlackBerry phone, and added a bunch of their own encryption and other things to these phones. Well, the federal government came after them because they alleged that Phantom Secure was making these devices explicitly for drug dealers and, you know, quote unquote bad guys. And so they have now arrested the former CEO of Phantom Secure, a guy named Vincent Ramos. They arrested him, actually, I think back in March. So he's actually been in custody for a while. And apparently he pled guilty to all these charges and is giving the government, I think, like $80 million in cash and assets and shutting down the company. And handing over domains that Phantom Secure used to own. And then I guess he's going to be released in before the end, or sorry, he's going to be sentenced before the end of the year. I don't know. I want to read a statement from the government, from U.S. Attorney Adam Braverman. Quote, the Phantom Secure Encrypted Communication Service was designed with one purpose, to provide drug traffickers and other violent criminals with a secure means by which to communicate openly about criminal activity without fear of detection by law enforcement. As a result of this investigation, Phantom Secure has been dismantled and its CEO, Vincent Ramos, now faces a significant prison sentence. Apparently, he also, Ramos, admitted that that Phantom Secure was remotely wiping devices upon request by their customers. And then there's these allegations that they used proxy servers, so servers in other physical locations, to hide the traffic and hide their location. Here's my problem. I feel like stories like this paint encryption and security in this negative light. And although they don't, you know, these stories don't come out and say it, to me, what they're insinuating is that if you believe in privacy and security and encryption, then you must be a bad guy with something to hide. And that's where they lose me. I mean, look, if this company was literally marketing these devices to drug dealers and drug cartels and criminal organizations and human traffickers and, you know, whomever else, and literally aiding and abetting these people and committing crimes, then yeah, absolutely shut them down. I just wish stories like this could either leave the part about encryption out, or if they're going to include it, if they could, you know, clarify and, you know, just mention that encryption in itself isn't illegal, nor is privacy. I feel like these stories always insinuate that the government has some right to all of your data at any given time that they choose, and that there's no expectation of right to privacy. And that bothers me. Again, if this guy literally was helping these people, you know, if he's helping criminals directly and expressly and explicitly, then yeah, lock him up. But, you know, for example, iOS, and I'm pretty sure Android, you can, if, say, for instance, you lost your phone, you can log in on iCloud.com and have your phone remotely wiped in 30 seconds within logging in. So does that mean anyone who does that has something to hide and is a criminal? No, absolutely not. And again, that's, I feel like this is a slippery slope, and I feel like the government is using this specter of terrorism as, you know, its way to basically change the public narrative about what I feel like are basic human rights. And, you know, I think encryption is a right. I think we have an expectation of privacy. I don't think the government should just get access to anything they want. Carte blanche anytime they want. Nothing's going to come out of this that affects any of our listeners, obviously, unless you're one of these criminals and now you got to find another hookup. But just something to think about. I would encourage you to be aware, because these issues seem to be coming up more frequently, and it seems like the government is pushing harder and harder to sort of vilify vilify encryption, and it should absolutely should not be that way. We should all, in my opinion, do everything we could to protect the right to encrypt. Anyway, off my soapbox now. We'll end with one that has to do with one of my favorite companies, Tesla. You guys know I love Tesla if you've listened to any other episodes. And by the way, my wife, side note, my wife just a couple of weeks ago got her own Model 3. And there's a whole story behind that. I won't bore you with it. But I will say that just in the time since I got mine, which was in February, and mine was manufactured in January. So between that time and when my wife took hers, delivery of hers a couple of weeks ago, they've made a lot of improvements actually to the Model 3, and they haven't publicized them all, but the suspension feels a lot smoother. The seats have been upgraded. I can notice a difference between hers and mine. Tesla's interesting in that they don't really do model years per se. So they don't go, okay, here's the new 2019 Tesla Model S and here's everything in it. They just, when they see an opportunity to improve something, they do it. And then a lot of times they don't even say anything about it. They just put it in the car. And then, you know, people who get new ones are like, oh yeah, I noticed this is different. That's cool. So anyway, if you're thinking about getting a Model 3, or if you're on the fence and maybe you want to wait for the standard range, which is cool, but they have made some improvements. So maybe if you test drove one early on, or your buddy had one and gave you a ride in it, and there were things you didn't like, there's a good chance that that if you were to get one now, those things would have all been addressed. And all the minor issues I had with mine actually are all addressed. My wife has none of them. So anyway, if you thought about taking a look before and something didn't seem right to you, you may want to take a look again. Okay, but anyway, so the story is actually about Cadillac and Tesla. According to Consumer Reports, and their I don't know if they did a poll or, you know, how they did this, but essentially they did a customer survey, I guess, on the semi-autonomous driving systems. So in Tesla, that's called Autopilot. And on Cadillac, that's called Super Cruise. Super Cruise, actually, according to the Consumer Reports surveyees, Super Cruise actually got a higher overall customer satisfaction score than did Autopilot, which is pretty interesting because and even though I have a Tesla and I love, you know, my car, I just seem to see more, like, I haven't seen anybody talk about Super Cruise. I've seen like one or two videos on YouTube about it, but I feel like Autopilot is in the news every other day, sometimes for good reasons and sometimes for bad. And, you know, sometimes there's a story there and sometimes it's much ado about nothing, but and maybe that's just the Tesla / Elon Musk effect. I don't know, but I haven't heard anybody really say anything super positive about Super Cruise. While I have heard people saying, you know, good and bad things about Autopilot, I've heard nothing about Cadillac's solution. But apparently, at least according to the people that they surveyed, Consumer Reports, and Consumer Reports is credible, so I'm not casting dispersions on the report. It just was interesting to me. They also tested, Nissan has a system called ProPilot. And then Volvo actually has one now. I'm pretty sure it's called Pilot Assist. And those two were sort of really lagging behind, like way behind Super Cruise and Autopilot. So it was really those two and then sort of everyone else, you know, the rest of the pack, you know, sort of all bunched together. But those two, I guess, really stood out. And Super Cruise was a little bit better, according to these people. So if anybody's got a Cadillac with Super Cruise, I would love to experience it. Hit me up if you do. And I'll show you Autopilot if you want. But if it's really that good, I'd love to see it because Autopilot's pretty damn good. Of course they're improving it over time through over the air software updates. And in fact, they'll be releasing, a major new version of the car operating system. And they just started rolling it out today, actually, version 9. But that's going to have a lot of autopilot improvements as well. So I'm keen to get my hands on that. But anyway, I'd love to hear, like, if someone has actual experience with Super Cruise, I'd love to hear it or even see it even better. What else? I think that's probably it for the week. We've got, like I said, we've got the Google Pixel event coming up on Tuesday. And so I don't know if I'll do a special episode for that necessarily, but, you know, we'll spend a good portion of next episode talking about it. And I just want to finish with a thank you. So on my last episode, I begged and pled for everyone to pray for Texas against Kansas State. And if you're a Texas football fan, if you're listening to this, you probably are because you probably came from Orange Bloods. I think that's safe to assume. And so it worked. And so I'm just going to beg and plead now as we're about 14 hours away from kickoff for the Red River rivalry or shootout or showdown or shit show or whatever you call it. We're coming up on the game with OU. We'll call it that. Throw some prayers up for Texas, man. It'd be huge to win that. And if you're an OU fan, then yeah, I don't know. Kiss my ass, I guess. And real quick, by the way, how Marcus talked about this on his Until the Whistle podcast, and it's always bugged me. How is it that there's a team who's basically their official team hand sign is our hand sign down? Like, how is OU's thing horns down? I always remember the Mac Brown quote. He said, "Some people hate us more than they like themselves." And I always think about that when I see someone doing the horns down. Like, come on, dude, you can't do better than that. Can't come up with a something. I mean, it's embarrassing, dude. Actually, the penis envy there is off the charts, I think. So, yeah, if you're an OU fan, kiss my ass and come up with your own hand sign, dude. Or dudette. No sexism here, baby. Okay, so that's it. Enjoy the weekend. Hook 'em horns, and we'll see you guys later. Peace.